Hello and welcome to Take Off the Podcast, stories by students and classics. This is episode 85. And today you can listen to an interview I made with Maggie Sokolik, a professor at the University of California in Berkeley. And in the past several months, what she's been working on, besides her regular work and teaching and research, is that she's been preparing for launching a massive open online course in writing. Some of you may be familiar with the concept of a MOOC, that is a massive online open course. And so just about half an hour before the second week activities started, Maggie and I connected to Skype to have a conversation about her work and about this MOOC. And I would like to share a few parts of that conversation with you now, okay? Thanks, Maggie, for finding time to talk with me.
No problem.
It's been a very rough time for you in the past. How long did it take you to kind of get the MOOC organized?
I would say almost a year, starting with all the kinds of approvals and discussions that had to go on at the university and with the State Department and initially with Voice of America. So there were a lot of different people involved. So I would say, the approvals were probably more difficult than developing the material.
Right. Like even Voice of America involved originally?
Well, it was actually a friend of mine who works at Voice of America. It was actually his idea.
Really? Okay. So one of my questions would be this: your writing practice and writing philosophy, like when you teach, whether it's online or off, what is it that you think you want to achieve in your teaching?
One of the things that I find with a lot of students is there's such a huge fear of making mistakes in writing that it actually shuts down the whole process. And a lot of students become afraid of writing. They kind of anticipate it with a lot of kind of nervousness and things. Mm-hmm. So my philosophy is that students need ways to write, to get out there, to practice, to stop being afraid of writing. And so I usually work through a number of activities in free writing and group writing and peer writing and all kinds of things to help students find a way to write that's pleasant for them and that's not painful and that's, doesn't involve some kind of punishment. So that's part of what
you mean
I'm
punishment
trying.
Punishment doesn't come from the feedback, right?
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And which is not to say that anything that a student writes is okay, but I want students to understand that criticism on writing is about the writing and not about the student.
That's right. So about the person, not about the piece.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I try to create environments where students feel safe to experiment, to make mistakes without large repercussions, which means lots of writing assignments that don't get graded. And students are sometimes surprised by that. But if everything they do gets a grade, then everything causes anxiety.
That's right. And you're talking about students in the BA programs or?
Correct.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. And these will be international students from all over the world, or?
Right now, I teach a mix, mm-hmm. both of international students and American students.
Yeah.
My specialty is working with, multilingual student writers, and it's also kind of, I don't want to say my preference because it makes it sound like I don't like working with American students, but, it really is my training and what I get a lot of gratification out of working with students who are also grappling with, dealing with writing in another language.
Right. I know you have a BA in anthropology, and I was just wondering whether that study that you did in your BA, do you think it has had any influence on your thinking about writing?
I do because my kind of area of specialty as a BA student was in anthropological linguistics. I was really always interested in language and how people used language and how language evolved. And so it kind of naturally led to actually a series of changing majors, as we say. So my BA was in anthropology. My master's is actually in romance linguistics. So I majored in French and minored in Italian.
And you studied in France for 2 years, right?
I actually did postdoctoral work in France. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was actually working
during that time.
But but you can also call it studying, because of course, after 7 years of classroom French, I arrived in Paris feeling completely at sea after the first day and realizing that nothing prepared me for either the level of colloquial language and all of that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. So you were anxious in that environment for some time as well, because you were afraid of making mistakes yourself? Or?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I remember I was at work one day and had to write a memo to someone else at work, and wrote it in French. And this was back in the day when, you know, you could write things by hand and give it to a secretary to type up. Gave it to the secretary, and it came back to me all with red marks all over it. So it was a good reminder of how my students feel.
A third-year student of mine, Lee Shagbenza, actually also participates in the MOOC, so he had a question to Maggie as well. So this is what he asked.
Hi, Maggie. I'm Benza Lishak from Hungary, and I would like to ask you if you could explain me how did you put together the curriculum for the course for more than 36,000 students, in terms of finding the right proficiency level for them. Thank you.
A lot of thought and actually a lot of revision, because in the end, I had to basically go with what I knew. And so I had to keep my own, say, beginning level students in mind who are here at the university, and then try to think one step before them. And so I was trying to anticipate if my students, before they got to their very first writing class at Berkeley, could take one additional class to prepare them for that, what would that class look like? And so that's how I started putting materials together.
I see. And am I interrupting? May I?
No, go ahead.
Okay, so some of these tasks that are featured in the first week and which will be featured in the rest of this 5-week course, and of course there are two more 5-week sessions,
correct,
right? Starting in January, and the third one in March, maybe?
Yes, I think those are the approximate dates.
So some of these tasks have been already used maybe with your students, or you kind of changed somewhat?
Yes, a lot of these tasks have been used with my students, and I've changed them, you know, obviously first for the, you know, online only environment, and also to, and what that entails mostly is more explanation, more links, more support, because of course, you know, my students would have me in my office hours to come and say, I didn't understand that, but here I have to anticipate what they might not understand.
That's
and
right.
Where they could go to learn more.
Okay, so some of the most recent details about the course, like 50,000 registered users?
Yes, I think this morning we're probably very close to 51,000.
Right.
Enrollment is open. We at first, when we were thinking about the course, we were thinking about closing the registration at, you know, by the beginning of the second week. And then edX said there's actually a lot of students who probably will want to join at any point. They don't really care
about
getting the certificate of completion. You know, they just want to access the material. So they recommended we leave the course just open. So given that we have another month to go of the course, the registration numbers that I can anticipate kind of astonish me. Yeah. So
you kind of expected 50,000 about like, what, 20,000, 30,000 most?
I would say, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we end up with, say, over 60,000.
60,000 by the end of this first five weeks. Yeah, I see.
It's definitely slowed down, you know, the registration, because I think a lot of students, you know, do go in and think, oh, well, it's already started, so I'm not going to sign up now. But we're still getting, you know, probably about 1,000 register a day still.
That's still huge. And it's such a great idea. I just noticed it, I think, yesterday, the map, where users can pin their locations,
right?
And we can see where we are, where they are, where we all are coming from.
Yeah, it's nice. And again, this is one of these great benefits of this kind of MOOC community. I would never have thought of that. A student actually contacted me and said, in another thing like this that we did for work, we used this map, and so I took a look at it. And I was like, "Ah, this is great!" And so, but you know, without contact from students, I may never have known about that feature.
Right, so it was a student suggestion, actually. The map.
Yes,
that's great.
That was a student suggestion.
That's nice. Yeah, we are all now. Well, the numbers are growing there as well. Like there are not like 50,000 pins yet, but it's nice to see this spread. Yeah. Yeah. So the second week is starting today in maybe half an hour.
Right? Correct.
And I've seen the one of the tasks is about effective sentences. Right? Like writing effective sentences. So what do you think about how most students can, well, maybe not most students, but what are some of the ways in which students can learn about what makes a sentence effective?
Well, I think most students, and I would say even a lot of teachers, non-student writers, one of the main issues they have is they use far too many words to get their point across. And so a lot of the activities surrounding the sentence in the next section have to do with, you know, how to find the kind of the heart of what you're trying to say and use only the number of words you really need to in order to get that point across, and how to find the precise words so that you don't have to use five words in order to express what one word could say. So to me, that's really key in writing effective sentences, is thinking about how to cut down the number of words you're using. Mm. Most of us use about 40% more words in our writing than we actually need to. It works well for students sometimes, because if they have to write papers with, you know, a certain number of words, they can achieve that word length more easily if they pad it with extra words. But it really weakens their writing. So
I absolutely agree there. And do you think that maybe some of this reason why some students do this, at least pad their text with unnecessary, maybe redundancies or clutter, is that maybe that's what they see in academic writing, the things that they read for courses?
Absolutely. and it's really too bad that we have so many bad models out there. Mm-hmm. And because I hear it from students, they say, well, that's the way, you know, we write in engineering, or that's the way that we write in chemistry or history or whatever the field might be. But in fact, you know, then you talk to professors or, you know, scholars in those areas, and they say, yeah, it is the way we write, but we don't have to. You know, we could do better at that.
Absolutely.
My brother's a chemistry professor, and he's always fighting to get his colleagues to write more clearly and, you know, in a straightforward manner so that more people can understand what they're talking about.
I'm looking forward to what the students are going to be doing with the effective sentence task, how they do that.
Yes, me too.
Yeah, I look forward to that. So second week starting today, and then there's another 4 weeks, and then another session, another 5 weeks, and then another the last
exactly.
5 weeks.
And
when you think of the like MOOC in the future, like in the longer run, how do you see that like in the next, I don't know, couple of years? Are you going to maybe have more, or do you think it's going to catch on even more internationally?
I think it will. I mean, there is already sort of a group or, you know, of scholars and things saying, oh, you know, we're already seeing its demise. But I think this MOOC shows that's probably not necessarily the case. I think if there is any falling out of interest for it, it's the MOOC creator's fault, I have to say, because, you know, for example, with edX, the number of tools that are available to make things really interactive and interesting for students are quite vast. I mean, what we're using in our course, I think, is just a sample of what's available. Yeah. And I think it's only kind of lack of imagination that could, you know, make MOOCs kind of less appealing for students. But I see more and more courses being added, a really wide variety of interesting courses. You know, they kind of started out mostly in the sciences and mathematics and things that, you know, could just be all self-graded. But I've noticed just over the past couple of days, things in history and politics and all kinds of ideas. And I've noticed a few of the students in our MOOC, you know, saying things like, oh, this is my fourth MOOC, I love MOOCs. So I think as long as the people who create them pay close attention to the potential for interaction and the potential for, you know, real student involvement and not just delivering kind of old style, you know, materials where it's just read and answer some questions and move on.
So if it's like building a real skill, that's important for the students to improve, maybe, right? That's going to be
exactly.
Like a boost. Yeah.
And that's kind of the thing, you know, nice thing about a MOOC that, you know, focuses on language development is that, you know, almost everything they do on the MOOC in terms of interaction is also part of that.
Right.
Whereas, you know, even if it's just writing out a greeting in a coherent way or responding to someone else's greeting, that all adds to that skill base. Whereas say a MOOC that's about math, you know, maybe you can't really say that.
That could be a different, like dynamism or interaction.
Right.
Yeah, pattern. All right. I think you've answered most of my questions. Of course, I would have more, but I know that you're busy. And I'm really very pleased that we could talk. This was we planned a chat before. I heard your voice before because I listened to your intro video and I listened to this other podcast that you gave to BBC, was it, I think?
It was British Council.
British Council, yeah. So my podcast doesn't have that kind of audience, but maybe a couple hundred. And if you want to put it on wherever, of course, you are free to share it if you want to share it with other people so that
more
people will hear it.
I definitely plan to, you know, we'll get the link out on the, you know, Facebook feed and things like that people can listen. I just think, you know, it's not about me, but all these opportunities to kind of listen and learn more about MOOC experience, and maybe they'll find some others that interest them and keep learning. I mean, I'm so amazed. Like this morning, I just got a message from someone saying, you know, am I the only one in Somalia taking the MOOC? And I'm thinking, we have students in Somalia.
You've been listening to Take Off the Podcast, Stories by Students and Classics, featuring an interview with Maggie Sokolik. If you want to join the course, the Writing MOOC, please go to www.edx.org and look for College Writing 2.1. And until next time, take care.